You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. I probably don't need to remind you about this at all, but aren't dragons freaking awesome? I mean, genuinely. I mean, they absolutely represent the worst parts of humanity. Greed, obsession with power, narcissism, manipulation, the idea that if something's just bigger and stronger, it's better than other things. All of that stuff, which is, of course, the worst of what we have to deal with as human beings, either in ourselves or in other people. But they're still freaking awesome, right? Giant lizards with wings that can breathe fire or do all sorts of things depending on the lore that that specific dragon is from. So I've been thinking a lot about dragons now that Bilbo is standing face to face with Smaug himself. Because this is the point where Bilbo has to confront the darkest, most terrible thing that he ever will have to confront. Aside from letting go of the ring eventually, which is arguably worse. I mean, it is Sauron, or at least his power inside the ring, and I'm sure you can make an argument that that is measurably worse than Smaug, although both are terrifying and terrible things to have to deal with. But in this case, he has to confront Smaug face to face. And I have to wonder how many of us, when we think back to this moment, like many of the moments in The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, the first thing that comes to mind is the movies. Because, well, we probably watch the movies more often than we read the books, although that's not true for everybody. And maybe for a lot of us, we read the books and then we saw the movies later on, and so that's kind of the vision we keep. And it's also a visual medium, so it's easier for us to remember the images and the scenes visually. But I bring this up because this moment doesn't play out the same way in the movies. Now, shocking revelation, I suppose. Many moments don't, especially when it comes to the Hobbit trilogy of films, because they decided to whittle down certain scenes for efficiency, but then they expanded other stuff. They brought other things in from other moments that happened at the same time frame that weren't specifically detailed in the book. You all know how that goes. But I have to wonder, do you remember what actually happens the first time they confront Smaug? Because it is not exactly the same. And it is very interesting for a few particular details, which, of course, I will be laying out for you in this episode. So sit back, ask yourself what you would do in this situation, and let's see what happens with Bilbo. Here we go. There he lay, a vast red-gold dragon, fast asleep. A thrumming came from his jaws and nostrils, and wisps of smoke, but his fires were low in slumber. Already, the very first sentence I'm reading as they look faced, well, at least Bilbo looks at Smaug's face, there's included a word in here that most of us probably don't use very often, thrumming. So I had to look it up. Thrum, it's a verb, to make continuous rhythmic humming sounds. The boat's huge engines thrummed in my ears would be one example. Or to strum the strings of a musical instrument in a rhythmic way. He thrums the strings of his guitar. I'm going to think about that now when I pick up my guitar. I'm going to tell my son, hey, thrum along with me. And he'll look at me like, what? What are you talking about? Oh, by the way, he picked up guitar this summer, which is super fun because he's, I guess, inside baseball information. He already played bass and drums and now he's playing guitar. He's 15 years old. He's doing amazing. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. This is the sound coming from his jaws and nostrils. Now, notice Tolkien doesn't say snoring. Snoring previously in the book has been associated with characters like Bomber, has been used as kind of a comedic kind of thing. That association here wouldn't make sense because we are looking at a gigantic red golden dragon thrumming. This isn't just snoring. This is something else. Beneath him, under all his limbs and his huge coiled tail, and all about him, on all sides, stretching away across the unseen floors, lay countless piles of precious things, gold, wrought, and unwrought, gems and jewels, and silver red stained in the ruddy light. Again, we get a reminder about the lighting in here being reddish. Now, you might wonder, where does that light come from? It appears that there are fires that are burning and that Smaug keeps it lit, which seems like a convenience. Otherwise, this would be extremely dark. I don't know if you've ever gone underground into a cave or into a place that has absolutely all of the lights blocked out, but absolute darkness is impossible to see in, and there it would make no sense for Bilbo to wander around in the darkness and bump into the dragon, right? So there had to be some light here, and the light that's here is red stained. Red associated with the dragon, red associated with some of those other situations that were not so good for the dwarves. Smaug lays here in this shape, kind of with his wings folded like a bat, another symbol of him being sinister. A bat is usually a sign associated with something like a vampire or something that is of the night, of darkness. And we find out that he's not all the same color. In fact, his belly is pale. It's crusted with gems and fragments of gold from lying on this bed of wealth that he's laid there for himself. As a child, I would think about this bed of gold and jewels and all of the metallic things and minerals underneath him and think, wow, that must be uncomfortable. But we have to remember that his scales are extremely hard. He doesn't find this uncomfortable. It's actually comfortable for him, but more importantly, he's guarding it and it shows his power. The ability to sleep on a wealth of gold, much like the people in our own world who decorate their homes or offices with extensive gold and jewelry. It's a sign of power and narcissism most of the time. And yet, amidst the scene, we're reminded that this is a place that the dwarves lived. There are coats of mail and helms and axes, swords and spears, great jars and vessels filled with a wealth that could not be guessed. And all of this is arraigned and lined up on the walls and around this specific scene because this used to be a functional place. This used to be a place where the dwarves lived, and they didn't just keep wealth here. Yes, they had great hoards of wealth. They mined it out of the ground, but they also had the things that they would use. And specifically in this case, would have used to try to protect it and failed. And then we get this section right here, which is just wonderful. To say that Bilbo's breath was taken away is no description at all. There are no words left to express his staggerment. Since men changed the language that they learned of elves in the days when all the world was wonderful. It's like a double whammy. Bilbo is just floored. He's never even dreamed of something like this. This much wealth existing in the world, let alone in one location. I would imagine that it clicks for him why it's so important for the dwarves to get this back, and why the people of Lake Town dreamed of gold coming down the river. But also, we're told a little bit of lore here from The Hobbit. It's hinted at the idea that the language of men descended from the elves whom they learned language from when the world was wonderful. That's a reference to Valinor. We're told that Bilbo had heard about hordes like this before, and that his heart was filled and pierced with enchantment and with the desire of dwarves. This might be a hint of dragon sickness, or just him understanding their perspective a little bit for the first time, or maybe both. And we're very specifically told that the gold was beyond price and count. It was so much that it would be impossible to tally it all. And we're also told that Bilbo gazes at this pile of gold with this dragon on it for what seems like an age. And a considerable amount of time goes by. The time between when he descends into this location to when he comes back feels like an entire day once we get there. So how long he stood there and just looked, we don't really know, but it may have been a significant bulk of that time. And then he's drawn almost against his will to come forward to the edge of the mounds of treasure. This is when he looks up and he sees the sleeping dragon above him. It's described as a dire menace even in his sleep. He grasped a great two-handled cup, as heavy as he could carry, and cast one fearful eye upwards. Smaug stirred a wing, opened a claw. The rumble of his snoring changed its note. It's as if by simply touching the treasure, somehow Smaug could feel that something had changed. And then Bilbo flees. And I have to bring this question up again. If you were in this situation, what would you have done? Bilbo stands there, gasps at the sight that he's seeing, sneaks up, grabs the biggest piece of the treasure he can possibly carry, and then runs away. Nothing else. He doesn't confront Smaug. He doesn't circle the room, seeing if he can find something that looks like the Arkenstone. He doesn't survey the rest of the area to see if there are any other doorways or hallways or anywhere else he could go in order to get into different parts of the location. He doesn't talk to Smaug, of course, because waking a dragon is probably a sure death. So notice here, he simply does what he was hired to do. To be a burglar. He burgles, which is a fun thing to say every time I say it, but he takes something and he leaves. And as he leaves, we're told that the dragon did not wake yet and shifts to other dreams of greed and violence. This is implying that those are the good dreams. If you and I were to have dreams of greed and violence, they would probably be some form of nightmare or at least something that's just uncomfortable. But for Smaug, these are his good dreams. He's happy, slumbering on his pile of wealth. And as Bilbo heads back up the passageway, he thinks to himself, I've done it. This will show them. More like a grocer than a burglar indeed. Well, we'll hear no more of that. And you can tell he's kept that in his mind since the beginning. That has been a taunt, a thing that he has been waiting to disprove since the very beginning of the journey. And in that Tolkien way, he tells us that he never hears about that ever again. He says, nor did he. He doesn't get teased about this anymore because he has already done the thing that none of the dwarves would dare do. He gets back up to Balin, and Balin is overjoyed to see him. Because Balin knows how dangerous this can be. Balin remembers dealing with Smaug. He picks Bilbo up and carries him out. That's how excited he is. And it is midnight. Time has gone by. Bilbo has spent so much time either descending and ascending the slope, which is significantly far to go. We learned previously that it goes all the way down to the root of the mountain, but also just standing there looking in awe at all the treasure. The clouds had covered the stars, and this is probably worth noting here because I feel like this is foreshadowing. Remember, the stars represent the elves, Varda, and now the stars are covered. That is not a good sign. Bilbo lays down, shuts his eyes, and it says, gasping and taking pleasure in the feel of the fresh air again. Remember, he has spent hours down breathing the air of the dragon, the toxic, warm fumes that heated the inside of that mountain. And I love the way the dwarves respond to Bilbo returning. They put themselves and their families for generations to come at his service, at your service, at your service. And not just their own service, generations. They're so happy that he returns. And he succeeded in at least taking something. Because you might look at this point and go, well, did he really succeed at much at all? But he proved to them something. It is possible to descend and ascend and to steal some of the treasure back. And that brings them hope. And in this moment, that's what they need more than else. So they start passing the cup back and forth and talking about the recovery of their treasure. This is the first time they've gotten any of their treasure back. But the celebration does not last. Suddenly, a vast rumbling woke in the mountain underneath as if it was an old volcano that had made up its mind to start eruptions once again. This isn't the only time we hear of Smaug being referred to as something akin to a force of nature. And speaking of Smaug, dragons go way back in the history of mankind through mythology across many different cultures. And I'm going to be digging into the different kinds of dragons and what they seem to mean in our bonus episode this week. So if you're a patron, get ready for that. But they close the door and they block it with a stone so that it doesn't completely close because who knows, it may lock and disappear and they won't be able to open it again. And the situation continues to get worse. Sounds echo up from far down in the depths, a bellowing and a trampling that made the ground beneath them tremble. This leads to the idea that Smaug is considerable in size. He's big enough to shake the ground that the mountain is on, or at least the ground that the mountain is. And we're told here that this is a stark reminder that Smaug is still to be reckoned with. Celebrating too much too early is probably a bad idea, because they haven't dealt with the dragon yet. It even says here, do not leave a live dragon out of your calculations if you live near him, as if this was kind of a mantra that people nearby had said at some point. And then we get this. Dragons may not have much real use for all their wealth, but they know it to an ounce as a rule, especially after long possession. And Smaug was no exception. He had passed from an uneasy dream in which a warrior, altogether insignificant in size but provided with a bitter sword and great courage, figured most unpleasantly, to a doze, and from a doze to wide waking. There was a breath of strange air in his cave. This hits on so many different things. First of all, we were told that the treasure is uncountable, and yet Smaug is able to count it. He can keep track of every little thing down to the smallest coin, and he noticed that it was taken almost supernaturally. Also, he was having a dream, and dreams figure into Tolkien's writings a lot. And in his dream is a small-sized warrior with a sword and great courage. Of course, that's Bilbo, but it tells us how much courage Bilbo has at this point. It confirms it, not just through his actions, but a direct statement that Bilbo is exceptionally courageous. And it was unpleasant to Smaug. And then he wakes up and he notices a breath of strange air in his cave. Again, his senses are so tuned that he's able to tell that somebody was there simply because of the air that they breathed, changing it's, well, smell, I guess. And then the narrator addresses the idea that there's this passageway that leads directly into his chamber, and Smaug never blocked it up. You would think he cares so much about this treasure, he would have blocked every entryway, or at least made a point to do something to guard it. And yet, he didn't. He missed this one.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
He never paid enough attention, and he starts to wonder, why did he never block this entry into this chamber? Now, clearly he's too big to fit through it, but dwarves aren't. And then he gets upset. Thieves, fire, murder. Notice he jumps to murder. Nobody has murdered anybody at this point, but yet he assumes. This is another common feature of a narcissist, somebody who takes the smallest slight, but then perceives it as tenfold worse than it actually is, and then has to return the injury to the person who they believe injured or insulted them. He jumps from thieves to fire to murder. He's going to return the thievery with murder. That is quite the ramp up. We're noted then that this hasn't happened since he first came to the mountain when the dwarves were still trying to fight for their kingdom. And his rage passes description. The sort of rage that is only seen when rich folk, interesting dig by Tolkien there, that have more than they can enjoy, suddenly lose something they have long had, but have never been used or wanted. Interesting critique of Tolkien on the wealthy class. I have to wonder if that comes from personal experience, but I don't have anything else to add to that because I'm not exactly sure. If you notice something in maybe one of the letters or somewhere where he's in an interview and he talks about that perspective, then please let me know, because I feel like this is hinting at something else. He then takes it upon himself to hunt down the thief, to hunt the whole mountain till he had caught the thief and had torn and trampled him, was his one thought. He goes through the gate. The waters rise. He soars into the air and starts blasting the mountain with green and scarlet flame. This is hinting at the green flame, which is toxic, and the fire that's red, and that, how that burns everything. And we get this little note here. The dwarves heard an awful rumor of his flight. That's an interesting use of the word rumor, but it makes sense. You can understand what Tolkien is saying. They get hints that this is happening on the other side of the mountain. And so, of course, they try to protect themselves. They crouch up against the walls, and boulders begin bearing down on them. He is attacking the mountain itself. And we are told that they would have been killed if it had not been for Bilbo once again thinking and saying, quick, quick, to the door, the tunnel, it's no good here. And then the dwarves are put in a precarious situation because all of them are not waiting at the door. You have to remember, Bomber and Boffer are down with the ponies, and so they struggle to haul them up in time. They all get into the door, and they close it in time before Smaug makes his way to that side of the mountain. It's also noted here that those were perhaps the worst moments they had been through yet, and they've been through a number of moments where they were on the precipice of either being eaten or killed or incarcerated for the rest of their lives, but they make it out. We also get this. A whirring noise was heard once they're inside the door. A red light touched the points of standing rocks, and the dragon came. And in Tolkien's genius use of building tension and release, he describes the situation and the dragon attacking the mountain so well. He talks about the beating of the wings like a roaring wind, another elemental kind of thing, something like a tornado or a hurricane. His hot breath shriveled the grass before the door. He's blowing fire at the door that they are hiding behind, and drove in through the crack they had left and scorched them as they lay hid. Flickering fires leapt up and black rock shadows danced. And then darkness. They put out the fires. They are able to save themselves, and they are rewarded with darkness. Remember, it's midnight and they're inside the cave and it is closed. The door is only barely open. So even if there was light outside, it wouldn't be very bright right now. And then they can hear the screaming of the ponies in terror. They burst their ropes and they gallop off, and the dragon swoops down and chases them, probably thinking, oh, maybe there's a rider on the ponies, but there isn't. And Thorin laments the poor ponies, saying that'll be the end of our beasts. And then he notes that there's nothing anyone can do once Smaug sees you and decides to pursue you. You can't get away. He's too fast. He's too powerful, and the ponies stand no chance. And again, I have to wonder if this is similar to a moment in World War I. They were still using ponies and horses in order to haul equipment. How many times were those poor animals destroyed by the machines of war when they were simply doing their jobs? How many soldiers felt heartbroken by the fact that their horse, who they'd spent long periods of time with and had bonded with as a creature, had to be left in a place where they couldn't protect it, and it didn't survive. And we're told that they don't really have anywhere they can go. The distance between here and the relative safety of the city is too far. They will be seen if they go outside. And so they stay in this dark passage in order to keep themselves alive. And then this exciting and, well, terrifying section of the story comes to a close with Smaug's perception of the whole thing. And I'll just read this paragraph here and leave you with this. He guessed from the ponies and from the traces of the camps he had discovered that men had come up from the river and the lake and had scaled the mountainside from the valley where the ponies had been standing. But the door withstood his searching eye. Now, remember that the supplies they were given to them were from the people who lived in Lake Town. So it looked like this was a group of humans. It didn't look like dwarven stuff. And he knows what dwarven stuff looks like for sure. Also, the door was designed by the dwarves to be undetectable when it was closed, and Smaug could not notice it. And the little high-walled bay had kept out his fiercest flames. Long he had hunted in vain till the dawn chilled his wrath. The sunlight itself calms him down. He's not a fan of it. Just like the other terrible creatures we've learned about, the trolls and the goblins, he doesn't like the sunlight. And he went back to his golden couch to sleep and to gather new strength. He would not forget or forgive the theft, not if 1,000 years turned him to smoldering stone. But he could afford to wait. Slow and silent, he crept back to his lair and half closed his eyes. Thank you so much for your continued support, and I hope you are enjoying this story as much as I am. I don't actually have any new patrons to welcome to the Patreon this week, which is uncommon. Usually people are signing up, but hey, you could be the next person I welcome. Head over to patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. Check out all the different tiers, and if you want, you can sign up for the bonus episode tier, where we'll be discussing dragons and history and what dragons represent and how some of that has changed over time. It's pretty cool stuff. Also, got to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Let's go through the list. We've got AK Music Lover, Aldarian Was Right, Apollo, Averiel, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Brandy D, Captain Legolas Turner, Daniel Nightweaver, David S., Divine Madman, Fulcrum, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Huon Is My Hero, Jezzer, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Matt, Party Snacks, Philip M, Richard J, Rosie Rose, Single Ent, Looking for Ent Wives, The Bestest Boy, and TJT. Thank you so much for your support. Also, thank you for all the questions last week. That was so great. If you have any other questions, feel free to sprinkle them in. Some others have come in since the time I was able to do the recording last week, so I'm going to keep those around just in case we get some more. And heck, if you absolutely want another question and answer episode, definitely leave some questions, because if enough of them stack up, I'm going to have to get them out of the way. So thank you for all of you and all of your support. Also, if you'd like to get your message on the show, then leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts in the US and I'll read it out. But please rate and review the show anywhere, even if I can't see it. It absolutely helps. And have a wonderful rest of your week. And until next time, be careful when dealing with dragons. But remember, they're predictable. There are ways to deal with it. Have a wonderful week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio. Or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year. For $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's policygenius.com.